Hi everyone, this is Janice, your neighborhood nutritionist. I've spent the last couple of years helping busy office professionals upgrade their health through upgrading their nutrition. And one thing was very obvious. Nobody's got time to read up on all the scientific stuff to know fact from fiction. So each week, I will talk to you about a different topic or concept in nutrition in simple, everyday terms, so you are empowered to make the best nutritional decisions. Get ready to learn about some new stuff, gain new insights into old concepts, and super boost your health. Hey everyone, so today we've got Dr. Natasha Hebel here to tell me about Chinese medicine. Welcome, Dr. Natasha, and thank you so much for coming on my podcast today.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here this morning.
Just to, you know, when we first got in touch, I'm from Chinese origins, and to me, Chinese medicine has always been part of my life, and I was really surprised and delighted to, you know, learn that you are also interested and you specialize in this area.
Yes, and I really came from a totally different side of it. So actually, my background is in molecular biology. My uncles and my grandfathers were all, physicians in like Western medicine. So your regular, you know, general practitioner. And so I always had an interest in medicine. But then when I went to college, I decided to work on research, DNA research. So I was really embedded in that area. When you have a cold, you take, you know, maybe some antibiotic if you don't get better and things like that. And so what happened to me is that one was my husband, who is actually from the Philippines. He didn't really, let's say, believe in Western medicine. He said, you know what, you can really, if you have a balanced life, you can really manage, you know, your allergies or your cold, different kinds of things, something that I had a lot. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I could see that really the connection between diet and exercise and just feeling better in general. But then what happened is that, you know, we were trying to get pregnant. And during that time, I discovered acupuncture. And so I was really scared of acupuncture. I'm like, oh my God, needles. Who wants to get stuck by needles? But what happened is I felt super relaxed every time after I had acupuncture. It really helped me manage stress and anxiety. Even though I never got pregnant, I didn't really continue acupuncture treatments. He just always stayed with me. It was just a very interesting process. When you do get acupuncture, you lie on the table and sometimes you feel like these things moving around in your body, which now I know is like energy or the chi, but at the time I didn't really know. And so fast forward 10, 15 years, I was like, you know, I had achieved quite a bit of stuff in my career. I was like, I'm looking for something else. And I want to go and study medicine, but I'm not going to study regular medicine. I want to go more into the holistic field. And so I was looking into naturopathic medicine, homeopathic medicine. And I thought, well, what about acupuncture? And that's how I actually became an acupuncturist, because I went back to school and I just loved it. And what I really loved about it is how Chinese medicine looks at the body as, or humans, it's really being part of the whole universe. And so the principles that apply to the universe or the cosmos also apply to the body. And I just found that so fascinating. And for me, it made a lot more sense, because what I had learned, during my studies is that when you do have, you know, medications like pharmacology, you really force a physiological change in your body. And there's always, you know, always have like a benefit risk analysis. And so, you know, you'll prescribe, you know, medications because, you know, the benefits outweigh the risks. But in Chinese medicine, there's just such a different, or probably all holistic medicines, that you look at it, you know, how can you help the body balance itself again? And that you really look at the body, mind, and spirit, something that all works together. And that's what makes you, you know, who you are and how you can best live your life in a balanced way. And so that's kind of a long story, but that's how I got to be an acupuncturist.
Well, I think that's brilliant. I think you touched on a few points there, which I also agree with very much, you know, which is looking at the body more holistically as being part of, you know, without sounding very woo-woo, but, you know, being part of our environment instead of as individual vacuumed bodies, right? We are part of what's around us, and what's around us is a part of us. And when we talk about Chinese medicine, without even going into specific illnesses or symptoms, one of the key concepts is around yin and yang. And I'm sure people have heard of this. You know, people use these two words a lot. You know, you're the yin to my yang. And people kind of get the black and white, you know, with two dots image in their heads. But perhaps you could explain to us, what is yin and what is yang?
Yes. So yin and yang, they don't exist separately. They're always together. You can't have yin without the yang. They're dependent on each other and they constantly change. So change is always constant. There's no, like, they just don't stay static. And then if you look at the yin and yang symbol, it's like basically like two fish, like a black fish and a white fish. And in the white fish, you see the black dot for the eye, and vice versa in the black fish. And what that means is that within yin, there's always going to be some yang. And within the yin, there will always be some yang. So they can't be like just pure. There's always a little bit of the other one. And so what happens also, if you look at this in a non-static way, what happens if there's too much yin, it kind of consumes the yang, because it's like within a circle, it becomes too much. And vice versa, it can be too much yang that consumes the yin. And so that's actually how we look at it in Chinese medicine. We look at the body also in a function of yin and yang. You want to have, you know, a balance. And how that originated is actually by observing nature. So by observing nature, for example, if you look at how the sun hits a hill, right? So there's the sunny side of the hill and the side of the hill that is not getting the sun. And so the side that hits the sun, that's the yang side, and the side that's dark, that's the yin side. And so if you look at everything in nature, there you can divide anything, any action, anything that exists can be divided into a yin and yang quality. And so there's always going to be this kind of balance or imbalance, this dynamic interplay between yin and yang. And so the principles of yin and yang, it really simplifies and unifies everything that goes on, you know, in the universe, but also in your body. So then from a Chinese medicine perspective, you can break down everything that happens, like a symptom, a disease, into these principles of what is like too much, what is too little, what is too yang, and what is too yin. And so yin and yang, so for example, if we look at our body, if you think about, like, especially if you were like still a farmer working in the fields, so your back, that is always exposed to the sun. So that is your yang side of the body, whereas the front of your body, that is the yin side of your body. So the outside is the yang, the inside is the yin. And you can also look at foods that way, you know, how they grow. If they're above ground, they, you know, they need the sun, then these are more yang fruits or vegetables, whereas whatever is in the earth, like root vegetables, they're definitely like yin vegetables. So you can, so it simplifies, kind of like you don't have to understand why something is a certain way or so, or certain, you know, long kind of, let's say if we look at biochemistry, there's so many different steps. In Chinese medicine, it's a lot more simplified. We just simply look at the balance or imbalance between something that's more yin and more yang.
So when you talk about yin and yang, you know, that makes complete sense. And I love how you describe, you know, the sunny or the shady side. And personally, growing up, I've always known, for example, that some foods are like hot for us and some foods are cold. And this is something that I consistently find difficult to explain to people who don't know the Chinese medicinal, you know, roots of this division. Would you be able to explain to listeners what does it mean that a food is hot or cold?
Yes. So what it means is that in So when we typically look at food, we look at, okay, what are the macronutrients, right? The proteins, the fats, the carbs. We look at that. But in Chinese medicine, we attribute an energetic quality to it. And so the energetic quality can be either hot or cold, like you said. And so it has a certain effect on the body. If it's a hot food, it will increase the yang or increase the heat in your body. And if it's cold, it'll do the opposite. And so that can be important if, you know, if you eat a balanced diet, it's not that important, right? So it's balanced. You'll have some hot foods, you'll have some cold foods. But let's say if you eat everything with cayenne pepper and cinnamon, which are, you know, hot spices, you know, that can potentially, because it's hot in your body, burn up your fluids, right? Because that's what happens, right? If you have a pot on the stove with some water, you keep on heating it up, it eventually the water will evaporate. And that's exactly what happens in your body as well. So if you eat too many cool foods, for example, salads or fruits in general are cool. And so with that kind of quality, that's called a yin quality. So it what it does, it lowers kind of like your internal temperature, if you think about it, and it can create what we call more of the mucus or sticky qualities in your body. And so that's why it's kind of more, you know, difficult to assign, you know, hot and cold to each and every food. But I think if you think about it in terms of what it represents, like, for example, many fruits are just cool, of a cool quality, whereas meats typically are warm. And if you look at the different kinds of meats, for example, lamb meat has a hotter quality than, for example, pork, just in terms of the color of it.
Yeah, and I think just to remind everyone that when we say hot or cool, we don't mean the temperature of the food. It doesn't matter if you cook a banana is still a cool food. And then obviously you have things like, I would say, more tropical fruits like lychees and mangoes, that's actually considered hot, right, for the system.
They can also be considered hot. But there's also a difference of opinion sometimes. Some people say it's still a cool food. Again, it becomes a matter of balance and imbalance, because remember when we talked about that the fish and the yin and yang? So let's say the fish, that's the white one, that would be like the yin fish with the black dot in it. So if you go to an extreme, you have so much cold, it can convert into heat. And so that's also what can happen. It can also happen that a certain constitution, a certain person typically runs hot. So that would be maybe a person that has, like, let's say, more red cheeks. It's somebody that when you wear a sweater, these people are still in shorts and tank tops. When they eat cooling foods, it's actually good for them. But let's say for you, who's somebody who feels cold, if you do eat the cold foods, actually they will have a detrimental effect on your health overall. So it's all kind of also relative. However, you can convert vegetables, I mean, fruits into warmer foods. For example, if you do, like, a peach per se is a cool, you know, food, energetically speaking. But if you bake it and you put some cinnamon on it, it will become a warm food.
That's really interesting. I mean, it's fun, right? It means you can basically still eat whatever you like, but then adapt it to what your body needs.
Yes, exactly. And I think the biggest takeaway that I just tell my patients is really to look at the balance, you know, it's and eat with the different seasons, because there's also energetic properties that associated with food, and that applies to the different seasons and the different organs.
I was going to come to seasons, because I know we talked about this before, where we both read the, I don't know what the English name is of the book,
The Yellow Emperor, yeah.
Yeah, we both read the Yellow Emperor's, like, medical book, let's call it that. And right at the beginning, they already talk about what your, I guess, your lifestyle and your schedule should look like for optimal health across the different seasons. And, you know, in the UK, for example, we do have quite clear seasons. And I know some other countries or maybe some states in America have, you know, like LA, I imagine is much more milder across the seasons.
Yeah.
How does that, from a Chinese medicine perspective, how should we be managing our health through the four seasons, and what other factors are there?
Yes, it's really interesting. So in Chinese medicine, you can, there's actually a branch of Chinese medicine that's called the five elements. And so the five elements is really the ancient way to look at, you know, the body and the organs, because based on the five season, and there are five because it's a late summer, and I'll go to them in detail in a second, but we associate for each season certain colors, certain flavors, and certain organs. And so, for example, in spring is really the season of growth, right? And just the color associated with that is green. So you can just imagine, you know, the flowers are emerging after winter. And so during summer, during spring, you want to eat things that are sour, right? So the sour foods are like the lemons, and it goes directly to your liver and gallbladder. And then the next season is the summer. The summer is obviously the hotter season, and the color associated with that is red. And that is also the color that we associate with the heart, but also the small intestine in Chinese medicine. And so that's actually the bitter color is the bitter flavor. That is the one that's associated with the fire element. And so that's kind of like a flavor that goes deeper into the body. It's also kind of like a detoxifying, flavor per se, right?
There's actually a dish, which is bitter melon, Chinese bitter melon.
Yes.
With eggs sometimes or tomatoes. And I know that is a very classic kind of food to have in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And now I know why.
Yeah. And you can also think about, you know, cooling foods during that time too, to, you know, balance it. And then in late summer, that is, the color yellow, and that's associated with the spleen or pancreas and stomach. And so you really want to prepare for what's coming up in winter. So you want to have really kind of nourishing foods. So if you think about the yellow, it's like the sweet potatoes or the squash or the chickpeas. That would be some good colors to associate with that season to eat it. And it's kind of like more the sweet flavor. And then in fall, that is more the pungent flavor that we're looking at, because this is the season in fall when we get colds, right? And we want to keep our lungs clear. So for example, peppermint is something to keep in mind because it has this kind of pungent property. But in terms of color, you can look at garlic and horseradish, for example. And for winter, so that's the time when we look at the salt, more salty foods, and also the dark color. So whereas in fall, we look at kind of like a gray silver color, in winter, we look at, you know, black or dark blue colors. And some of the foods that benefit the kidney and urinary bladders, which is, that's their season. Basically, it's, you know, the kidney beans, plums, and roast vegetables, if you think about it, because that's really a warming sort of food, you know.
And yeah, I never really considered the color of the foods.
And you can really play it different way, because the root vegetables, if you think, they are also a yin quality, because they're in the ground. Mm-hmm. And but then, you know, depending on if you bake them, right, you have roasted vegetables. So then again, they become a little bit warmer to the body. So you can look at it in different ways. And again, it all comes back to having like a balance. And, there's definitely some folks that specialize in really looking at the diet in a very specific way based on the constitution of their client in person. They put, you know, certain dietary plans together. But I think overall, just kind of go with the season and think about, you know, in winter, we're not really supposed to eat like a mango or pineapple. If you think about if it's really cold, it's really something more that you would eat during summertime. But of course, nowadays we have access to also tropical fruits in non-tropical regions. But really, if you want to be kind of like in sync with what's natural for your body, you would never eat a pineapple when it's snowing outside.
You mentioned at the beginning, mind, body, and soul, I think.
Yes.
So maybe we can touch on, I'm not sure if you want to go with the mind first or the soul first, because I know, again, in the Yellow Emperor's book, it does talk about in the different seasons, our emotions are also impacted. But I imagine that ties closely with the soul part as well.
Yes, I think I would just kind of combine it, and I can talk about the different emotions that are associated with the organs. So when I talked about the five seasons, you noticed that with every season, I had always two organs because these are organ pairs, and one organ is yin and the other one is yang. And so the yin, that's really kind of like the substance of the organ, and yang is the function. So for example, with the liver and the gallbladder, so the liver would be the yin, the function organ, and the substance organ and the function organ would be the gallbladder. So that's kind of like the empty organ, the yang organ. And so all the yin organs actually have some spirits, but emotions associated with them. And so with when we look at the liver, or let's say the wood element, so that would be the spring element. I know it gets confusing with all the different terms, but let's look at the liver, which is equals spring and wood in the color green. And that is really the emotion of anger, you know, anger and envy. And which is also in other cultures, right? Like you look at the color green and there are some expressions, right? That green is kind of like the color of envy.
And green, like if you look at the emoji, is like being sick.
Yeah. Well, which is like, you know, if you throw up in the bile, you know, it's like some kind of ugly green yellow color, isn't it? If you really think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so when you look at the emotion of... let's go to extreme, like fear. Fear, that's the seat of fear is really in our kidneys. And so if you think about it, that is kind of like the feeling of not being supported, or just the survival mode, right? And the kidneys are the most fundamental organs in the body, because at conception in Chinese medicine, there is the conceptual fire that starts in the kidneys. And so we associate the emotion of fear with the kidneys. And if you think about it, it's like in terrible fear, if you fear for your life, you know, you can, you know, especially you can lose your bowels or whatnot. It's really, that's really deep-seated fear. And that's located in the kidneys. And so the opposite from that is really your joy. And the joy is felt in your heart. And so that's really the emotion that we associate with the heart organ. And it's interesting that, you know, when we studied like the heart and joy, and you would think you could never have too much joy, but actually that is not true. Because in Chinese medicine, you're always looking at the balance, and you can have too much joy in your life. Because if you're like over exuberant all the time, you're literally burning out. You know, you're burning up all your yin in the body. And when I first heard about it, it just didn't make any sense to me. But then if you think about a person that is bipolar, you can see that that's the case. It cannot be sustained to have this continuous exuberance. There will come a period of depression again. And so so even joy is something to be enjoyed in balance, you know, not to have it just like all the time. And then when we go to the spleen and pancreas organ, and so that's the worry. So if we are worried, actually, that really affects our spleen, and we have a harder time digesting, for example, or sleeping, and that's closely associated with the spleen. And then grief, that is associated with what we call the metal element, or the lung and large intestine. So that's like the fall season is the grief.
So that was an extremely complicated but very insightful explanation, I feel, of how the mind, body, and soul and the environment connect, right, in terms of Chinese medicine. Now, to more everyday examples, growing up, there were a lot of these rules around what to eat, what not to eat, that I just grew up accepting because that's how I grew up. Especially, you know, I've got quite long hair and I've always been reminded, don't wash your hair too late in the night and then sleep with wet hair. If you do, you have to dry your hair completely before going to sleep. What is the actual explanation behind that?
Well, first of all, the hair and the quality of your hair, you know, how much it grows, and even if it doesn't get, you know, gray at a young age, it's associated with your kidneys. And the kidneys is kind of like your genetic material, your DNA. So it's really like the deepest part of you that determines your, what we call growth and reproduction. And so the hair is an expression of the kidneys. So you don't want to leave it wet because that dampness, you know, it converts into cold and you just don't want to have that happen to your body. And so as an extension of the kidneys, having the cold and damp, it's just not a good thing, especially if you go to sleep, because it just will magnify, because during that time you're in the yin state, in a very inactive state, which is already a cool state. And you really get into too much coldness, which then, you know, it's the law of extremes. If it gets too extreme, can convert into heat. And so we don't want that. We really want to have a balance always in our bodies.
It's been a pretty, I guess, stressful time for a lot of people. And I know that some people might be getting headaches. And from a Western nutrition and medicine point of view, we know that there are different types of headaches, right? And if you go on and Google it, they'll say, oh, if the left side of your head hurts, this is what it means, or the right side, or if it's a migraine, all of these things. Is there such a distinction in Chinese medicine as well?
Yes. Headaches actually, and where they're located, it's a very, very important kind of diagnostic tool almost for practitioners of Chinese medicine. So first of all, we talked about that we can have the yin and yang symptoms. So if you have a headache and you press with your hands on it, if your headache gets better, we call it a deficiency headache. If it gets worse when you press your hands on it and it makes it worse, then that's an excess headache. Okay, so if it's excess, it's more on the yang side. If it's deficient, it's more on the yin side. So just generally speaking, if somebody has an excess headache, that's typically a little bit easier to treat because it tells us there's just something of too much going on. And so typically, you know, rest will help it, or some specific, you know, acupunctures or acupressure points. If there is what we call a deficiency headache, so basically you put your hands on your head and it actually does feel better, that gives an indication that your body's probably really fatigued, that you need to rest a little bit more. Your body needs a little bit more time to recover. So it's kind of like a longer road to recovery, just generally speaking. Another thing we know is where the headache is located. So a frontal headache is typically associated with something that goes on in your stomach. So that could very often be related to something that you ate that doesn't agree with you, some kind of food sensitivity. And so that's something to keep in mind. So if you have a headache that's behind your eyes, that is related to your liver. And very often that's related also to stress. So if you are just being like in a frustration mode or something, that is related to, you know, the kidney and the wood elements. So that's really if you feel that behind your eyes. However, if it's just above your ears, like on the sides in the temporal area of your head, that is typically called like a gallbladder headache. So again, it's associated with the wood element or spring season. And so maybe that could even be related to a certain draft you have been exposed to. Or again, in terms of digestion, maybe you know, fatty foods having problems, you know, producing or releasing the bile. So that's the headache on the temporal side. Then the other headache is the one that starts at the back of your head, like at the base of your neck, and kind of goes all the way over to your whole head. And that's a headache that's often related to the meridian called urinary bladder, which runs all the way along your back. It's the most young meridian. And so that's very often related to muscular tension. And so typically what helps with that is to do some stretching, you know, be conscious of your posture and different things. So that's kind of like how we look at headaches. It's by no means all of it, but that's like a quick look at how we look at headaches. Yes.
I find it so interesting that basically you can draw a map on your head, which reflects the different organs in your body. And that really reminds me of reflexology.
Yes.
And a couple of other questions that just popped into my head, actually. With Chinese medicine, is there a belief around things being hereditary?
Yes, because you inherit your, you know, basically your DNA, we call it like your gene, you inherit that from your parents. And so most definitely there's a belief in the genetic material that is being transmitted from generation to generation. In fact, some would say that like a firstborn typically has a better DNA than somebody who's like the seventh or eighth child. And yeah, so most definitely it's all related to that kidney energy, which represents your growth and reproduction, basically. Yes.
Interesting. I'm not the firstborn, damn it. and one thing that I've seen in a lot of Chinese films and TV shows portraying old, you know, old-timey China, Chinese doctors feel your pulse.
Yes.
They don't have a stethoscope. And in these films or TV shows, they can tell if you have an illness, they can tell if you're pregnant, just by whether or not the pulse is weak, strong, or like long, or like floaty. Like, how does that all work?
Yes, there are actually 27 different pulse types that we feel.
Wow.
And yes, it's in...
And sometimes I can't even feel my own properly.
Yes, and that is a real art. And these are actually not so much acupuncturists, but Chinese medicine doctors that are very experienced in prescribing herbal medicine. You really have to know how to feel the pulses. And so the pulses, there's actually three different positions on each side of your wrist, and then there are different depths. And so we feel, based on the position of where the pulse is, we know which kind of organ is related to it, and then the quality of the pulse, where it is found, like more on the surface, middle, or lower. And then when you put the pressure on it, does the pulse kind of like slip away, or does it get stronger? All of these different things are being classified, and they give you an indication of what's going on with the organs. And so for, I would say, Western practitioners, it is more difficult, I think, to be really experts in pulse diagnosis, because you have to feel it and it changes. You know, your pulse changes, like everything, the whole vibration of a body changes in the presence of another person. And even whatever the person that is being examined thinks about, and even what the practitioner thinks about. So it's just, it's really an art. It's an art to be able to feel the pulses and to kind of get in sync with the other person and see what the pulse is telling you. But it's definitely possible to feel many, many different things with a pulse. And I know one of my teachers was able to tell somebody she was pregnant before she was... Actually, he could tell that she had a baby girl, and he was right.
That is mind-blowing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, yeah.
So I guess coming to the end of our chat, which I've thoroughly enjoyed, can you give us three takeaways in terms of what people, you know, who are listening to this episode can go away and try to do immediately?
Yes, I think the number one thing, especially now with, you know, we're in autumn and winter is coming, is to always bring a scarf with you wherever you go. Because at the base of your neck, that's actually where pathogens will enter. So if you get a draft or it's just cold, it can really enter, you know, at the base of your neck, and you want to have that area covered at all times. Like even in summer, actually, if you go somewhere there's air conditioning or just a cold draft, and that's how we get sick very easily. So if somebody, you know, very often you'll find Chinese medical practitioners, they always have, you know, a scarf with them. So that would be like the number one thing. Just never keep that uncovered. Like especially tank tops. I think tank tops are just really not good for you. And even when you sleep at night, think about it. Make sure you're covered in your upper back area. And the second thing I think that's super important is to always have a hot tea or hot broth or soup when you eat something cold. For example, like a salad. You know, a salad has a cold quality to your body. And it's more difficult if you think about, you know, body's a certain temperature to digest the foods. They have to be at a certain temperature. So if you eat a cold salad, you know, just cold vegetables or something, your body has to work extra hard to increase the temperature so it can break down all the different components of the food. So by having some tea, hot tea before and after, it's really helpful to help your digestive fire to stay hot enough so it can digest the food. And then my third tip for you is to just really enjoy whatever kind of, like, under quotation marks, forbidden foods you may have. You know, we all know what's healthy, what's unhealthy, but let's face it, you know, we're more than just, you know, the molecules in our body. We also have our spirits, and it's just really important to feel happy too. So it's okay to enjoy a meal that maybe has some dessert or, you know, some alcoholic drinks or whatever it is that you really enjoy, and just have it in moderation and truly enjoy it when you have it.
And you can also balance that out, right? With
exactly
things that are good for you.
Yeah, that's it. It's just about the balance. You don't deprive yourself like 100% of the time. Try to eat really well, you know, 80 to 85% of the time, and the rest of it, just give yourself a little bit of slack and enjoy it. You know, life is short, so.
And I guess just looking forward a little bit for when the weather gets warmer, what are some of your tips around how do we cool down ourselves?
Yes, definitely. I would say that's the time to eat some more fruits. You know, you don't want to eat too many fruits during winter time, but stay with the season. Go to a farmer's market and see what vegetables and fruits are available and buy those. And so during springtime, it's really important to have some of the bitter foods like dandelion or, you know, the green leafy vegetables. That helps you to detox your body. And that's just a really good idea to do that during springtime.
And the last question then for you, Natasha, what is the one food that always takes you to your happy place?
Okay, I have to say it's pasta. Because what I love about pasta is I really like to be creative with pasta. Like, you throw me anywhere and show me a pantry or refrigerator, I can throw together a really awesome pasta sauce. And that's what I enjoy about the pasta, to just create some kind of sauce that's a little bit different, and then just enjoying the meal with, you know, friends and family. I don't know. That just brings me to my happy place. It's just something fun. Not that I recommend eating pasta every day, but, it's just one of those things.
And that's it for this episode of Neighborhood Nutritionist. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I hope you've really enjoyed it and learned something you can take away with you today. If you could take a second to share this episode with one person you think will love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening now. See you soon!